Thank you. Please be seated. The court has four matters on its oral submission docket. We will complete all of these before our lunch break. They are Douglas K. McIntyre, M.D. versus Deborah Marie Ramirez and others from Travis County and the 3rd Appellate District. Hoffman LaRoche, Inc. versus Joan Zeltwanger from Dallas County and the 13th Appellate District. In the interest of LMI and JAI from Galveston County and the 14th Appellate District, In re the State Bar of Texas, an original mandamus proceeding. In each of these matters, the court is allotted 20 minutes for each side to present argument. The relator or petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of the court. We are recording these arguments, and you may purchase a copy of a tape from our clerk's office for a nominal fee. The court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in McIntyre versus Ramirez.
Please report. My name is Jim Eubank, along with Maria Jones, who we represent Douglas McIntyre. On April 23, 1998, when Dr. McIntyre was at the hospital, he referred an overhead page called Dr. Stort in labor and delivery room number 2. He did not hesitate to leave his patient and go to labor and delivery room number 2, where he was confronted with two emergencies of the worst magnitude in labor and delivery. The first emergency was the baby was about to be born. The head was crowning already. Dr. McIntyre had less than a minute to assess what was going on from a patient he had never seen before, never monitored, had no idea about the progression of labor. The second emergency that he was faced with is the baby developed a shoulder dystocia, that is, the shoulders were too wide for the birth canal, which is a life-threatening situation for both the mother and child. Dr. McIntyre did not hesitate to go to labor and delivery and respond to those two emergencies, nor did he hesitate to actually deliver the child under those emergency circumstances. The first thing on his mind that day was, of course, to respond to the emergency. The last thing on his mind was the expectation that he might be sued for responding as a good Samaritan for actually saving the child from brain damage and possible death.
Mr. Eubank, how do you interpret 74001D?
Yes.
It's the plain language, and how do we interpret that?
I think the plain language means that the phrase ordinarily received or be entitled to receive means that ordinarily modifies both of those phrases, which means that you look to the customary evidence of what one is actually did receive and also the customary of what they're entitled to receive, as opposed to what the Court of Appeals did, which inserted the phrase legal into a phrase that I don't think the legislature intended at all.
And what was the evidence on the customary?
The evidence on customary from Dr. McIntyre was very, very specific. First of all, he, by affidavit and deposition, he did not charge a bill for his services. He did not render his services in expectation of being paid. The type of services he provided are never the type for which he would charge. He did not believe he could ethically be allowed to bill Ms. Ramirez. He had never seen or heard of a doctor charging for this type of emergency service. He was not obligated to respond to another patient's emergency. He responded voluntarily as opposed to Ms. Ramirez being his patient, and he was not an emergency room doctor. The only controverting evidence that came from the other side, interestingly, and first of all, there was no evidence from Ms. Ramirez about what her expectations were. Of course, she was delivering the child. Dr. McIntyre responded to that. The other affidavit that they produced was from a Dr. Edelberg from Maryland. Dr. Edelberg's affidavit was struck by Judge McCown in the trial court because his statement in controversy was nothing more than a legal conclusion in the exact phrase that he parroted the words of subparagraph D of the Good Samaritan statute. He said, Dr. McIntyre, when he delivered the baby, was entitled to bill and receive a fee. Now, entitlement, according to the respondent's theory...
Before we get into entitlement, with regard to the term customarily, should the court look at the custom... with regard to national standard or local standard?
In terms of labor and delivery, certainly it is a national standard. In terms of billing, there's no indication, there's no case law that indicates that billing is a national standard whatsoever. Now, Judge McCallum, in his response in his statement of facts, sets out not that he was viewing this in a locality standard. He was pointing out that Dr. Edelberg simply didn't have any facts to support his legal conclusion. And so I don't think that's an accurate characterization of what the affidavit was from Dr. Edelberg, or what the distinction by Judge McCowan was. Specifically, what Judge McCowan pointed out is, look, you don't have any statements at all to say that you are familiar with what billing practices are for emergency. You don't have any facts that you bill for the services. There's no evidence that you know it is customary or ordinary to bill, or even that you've made an inquiry as to whether it's customary or ordinary to bill for emergency services. None of that was in Dr. Edelberg's affidavit. And the reason why I think it's important is because every state has different laws about entitlement. Every state has different laws about physician-patient privilege. And so you need to have specific facts and not just a mere legal conclusion in order to support a controversial
condition. Is it really true that every state has different laws about when doctors are entitled to send a bill?
Well, actually, that's an overstatement, Judge, because I haven't researched all that, but I know that, for example, in Texas, the plaintiffs have cited the restatement of restitution, Section 114. That has been adopted in some states, but has not been adopted in Texas. And so there's simply a wide variety of laws out there that would be applicable to whether a doctor might ordinarily be entitled to receive compensation.
Was there any discovery attempted or accomplished in this case as to Dr. McIntyre's past billings?
Yes,
and whether or not any of those were to someone who had not hired him?
They were. There were specific deposition questions asked. And in fact, some of the evidence that we attached to our summary judgment were responses by Dr. McIntyre to questions asked by the plaintiffs during that deposition. They asked him specifically, and the evidence is in the summary judgment record, have you ever billed for these sort of services? And that's where he responded, never, and I don't know anyone that would.
They never attempted to look at his bills, in actuality, look at his whole account receivable.
No, they did not. And they would not have, because Dr. McIntyre would have, he made the plain statement. Now, I've never billed for responding to an emergency like this.
And how many times had he responded to such an emergency?
That was not inquired of, not part of the summary judgment proof.
Does the patient in this situation receive the services free?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so even the treating physician, because they weren't there, they don't get a fee for this?
There was no summary judgment evidence as to whether or not Dr. Gunther submitted a bill for services that she provided or did not provide, nor was there any summary judgment evidence about the hospital. Of course, Dr. Gunner, as a treating physician, is in a very different situation, just like the labor and delivery nurses were in a very different position from the volunteer who steps forward. Those particular people, the labor and delivery nurses, they expect to be paid for responding to emergencies. And subsection D specifically was passed in 1993 to make sure that those who had a pre-existing duty to respond to emergencies would not be able to get away from their liability and will not be able to seek protection of the statute by simply waiving their fee. And I understand that.
Let's go back to a question that Judge O'Neill started to raise about the plain language of the statute. The Good Samaritan statute, subsection D, reads a person who would ordinarily receive or be entitled to receive remuneration, paraphrasing, for administrative care, that person would not be subject to the exemption under this statute. The Court of Appeals said that because of the word or, essentially, that in order to conclusively prove your defense, you have to negate both of those prongs. You take issue with that.
Absolutely.
Does your position conflict with the plain language of the statute?
No, I think, in fact, the plain language of the statute supports our position. This Court, of course, has to look at a variety of tests in interpreting legislative intent and interpreting the statute itself. Most of the cases that I've seen from this court indicate that this court should look at to see whether or not, and I quote, you must reject interpretations of the statute that defeat the purpose of the legislation so long as another reasonable interpretation exists. The other reasonable interpretation is that the Court of Appeals has inserted the phrase legal entitlement when no legal entitlement was intended by the legislature. For example, and this is the reason why I get to the heart of the public policy and the statutory interpretation and the legislative intent.
Well, Mr. Eubank, do you reach the question of D if you don't satisfy C1?
C1 is purely for an emergency room doctor who is responding to an emergency in the hospital setting. That is not Dr. McIntyre's situation.
No, C applies to if the scene of the emergency is in a hospital.
Yes.
Which is this was.
Yes.
And it says a person who in good faith administers emergency care is not liable for civil damages, which is your argument.
Yes, sir.
And they say that there's an exception to that, is if they regularly administer care in the emergency room, unless they're in that emergency room solely unrelated to the particular work they do. The respondent here says this is a career obstetrician. There's no allegations. They don't seem to be arguing that this is an emergency room physician. So this is not someone who regularly works in the hospital emergency room. And so do you reach the question that the deeming the salary seems to me only comes up if they would ordinarily be working in the emergency room and they're trying to avoid that by waiving a fee, even if it was emergency service.
Ted, you're exactly correct. I think that Dr. McIntyre fits squarely under subsection C. He was rendering emergency services in a hospital setting, but he's not under the exception of C1. He's not an emergency room doctor administering care in an emergency room.
And D, by its terms, only tries to reach that doctor who is attempting to be claimed as a Good Samaritan by waiving their fee. And this says, no, we're just going to deem, if this is what you usually charge for, this is what we're going to deem you charge for.
I think that the argument that I think there's no question that Dr. McIntyre does not fit under the exception of C1. The question is whether he fits under the exception of B1 that is mentioned in subsection D as well. And that's where we believe that the evidence is uncontroverted that Dr. McIntyre did not render these services in order to seek or think that he was entitled to receive remuneration when he volunteered. If, in fact, the plaintiff's theory is correct and the Court of Appeals theory is correct addressing Judge Wainwright's concerns, then what they're discouraging is specialists who might be entitled under some theory to send a bill for responding to emergencies in their specialty. Now, for example, a dentist and an obstetrician are in the hospital. There's an obstetrical emergency. The dentist certainly could never bill for his services or be entitled to send a bill or receive a fee. The obstetrician, under their theory, would be entitled to submit a bill or a fee, but for the Good Samaritan statute. The legislature clearly intends to encourage doctors to respond to emergencies in their specialty. Yet those would be the very doctors that the Court of Appeals opinion would discourage from responding. I don't think that meets with the legislative intent. I don't think that's a reasonable interpretation. The only case in Texas to actually address the question about the Good Samaritan statute and emergencies in the hospital is Hernandez versus Luke Parks, 1994, no writ case out of the Houston court. And that court held specifically that the purpose of the statute is to encourage doctors to respond to emergencies in the hospital with no fear that they would be sued. Subsection D clarified that those doctors who had a pre-existing duty to respond can't get out and are not entitled to protection because they waived their fee. But a California case, Versiaga, that has been cited in Hernandez with approval, speaks to the question about specialists and whether they should be encouraged to respond to emergencies in their specialty. They said such a restriction would deny victims the benefit of knowledgeable and experienced care and would not promote the legislative purpose of inducing physicians to provide medical care to those in need. Because the Court of Appeals opinion now inserts the word legal entitlement where none existed, it now adds a separate burden upon doctors to negate some unknown legal theories of restitution and implied contract or whatever it may be. That simply can't be the intent, because you could always defeat a doctor's summary judgment when he responds to an emergency in his specialty by having some affidavit from some expert who has a legal conclusion of, well, Dr. McIntyre has been doing this for 20 years, and he bills his other patients for these types of services. He was entitled to send a bill in this case. That simply can't be what the legislature intended, because it discourages those doctors from responding to emergencies in their specialty.
Do you agree that generally speaking, subparagraph B applies? And I mean, you're arguing that it doesn't apply generally, that somebody who just shows up would lose this if anybody could prove that they might have otherwise been entitled to charge a fee for just in any circumstance, any emergency, anywhere. And that's your argument. You can't do it that way.
That's correct. You know, I think the reasonable interpretation may be that Dr. McIntyre fits only under subsection C and not B1 or C1. And all he has to do is meet the qualifications under subsection C. Because we have conclusively established with Dr. McIntyre, and the Court of Appeals agreed with this, he did not seek remuneration, nor did he expect remuneration. And that's exactly what B1 speaks to. What I think B1 tries to make sure is that if you are the treating doctor and you're expected to go and respond to treatment by your patient, then you simply can't escape the liability by saying, well, I'm not going to send that patient a fee. But if this court concludes that Dr. McIntyre does not fit under B1 or C1, then subsection D does not apply, and he has clearly met all the qualifications under subsection C.
What did the legislature then mean in D about entitlement? I mean, that is a legal concept. What were they getting at there?
I think it's designed, again, to catch those doctors who think that they can avoid liability by simply waiving their fee or not charging a fee, not sending a bill. Because if they don't, they could say, well, I didn't expect to send a bill, nor am I entitled to send a bill. When in fact, they may be an emergency room doctor, they may be a treating doctor, they may be the attending doctor, or the partner of the attending doctor. And that's what I think the legislature intended to prevent people jumping out of the, jumping into the Good Samaritan statute under the cloak of that. Common English interpretations of the phrase, ordinarily receive or be entitled to receive, indicates in my mind, our interpretation, that ordinarily modifies, receive, and modifies entitlement to receive.
And how much does your argument depend on that? I mean, if ordinarily does not refer to entitlement, then is there any legislative history to show us what we are to look at to determine what entitlement is?
The only legislative history that we can look at, and I've searched for cases that have interpreted that, what entitled is, the only cases that I found indicate that when you have an adverb and then two disjunctive phrases after that, A or B, that the adverb modifies A and B.
Well, but again, the premise of my question is, what if that were not the case?
If that's not the case, Dr. McIntyre's summary judgment proof negates both of them. Because he talked about, ordinarily, he would never send a bill and doesn't know anybody that would ever send a bill. Basically, his evidence is controverted on both, not controverted on either receipt or entitled to receipt.
So your argument does hinge on whether we find ordinarily modifies entitlement.
I think because the Court of Appeals inserted that, the Court of Appeals decided that, I think that is certainly important, yes. But even if the court decided ordinarily does not modify entitled to receive, and you look at that, then I think Dr. McIntyre's summary judgment proof defeats it as well.
But you'd agree it'd be a more difficult question if there's not the modifier there.
It would be more difficult, yes it would, but for the fact that Dr. Edelberg's affidavit is the only controverting affidavit, and it's clearly a legal conclusion and has no force in effect.
Let me ask.
That's an abuse of discretion standard.
Just one more question, stepping outside of the statute. Would a doctor under these same circumstances, if he sent a bill, would he be entitled to collect it?
It would be the doctor sending the bill, and that's where it would be generated from. It would not be the patient sending the bill saying, please.
Right, so let's say Dr. McIntyre, and let's just step outside the statute for a second. He performed these services, and no negligence was involved, no allegation of it. Would he be entitled to collect on a bill that he sent to the patient for those services?
I don't think so. And
why
the
not?
Reason I do is because that's for two reasons for that. First of all, this court decided in a case called St. John v. Pope several years ago that discussed, it's a big case on physician-patient relationship. And under those circumstances, no physician-patient relationship is necessarily established because it's on contractual grounds. The second reason is that in order for the plaintiff's theory to be correct, you've got to look at these, what are the elements of implied contract? What are the elements of restitution? And are they applicable to the emergency situation? And I find no case law at all in which the state of Texas has said that if a doctor voluntarily renders emergency services, that he is then entitled to bill for those services. And it's because there is no meeting of the minds about the doctor saying, I'm going to provide services for a fee, and the patient agreeing.
Well, you probably haven't found any that says he can't, right? I mean, there just are no cases one way or the other on that. Why would Quantum Merriweth apply?
I'm sorry? Quantum Merriweth?
Why would Quantum Merriweth apply?
Quantum Merriweth was not raised at any stage.
Understand.
Okay, and if it was raised, again, I think even you look at quantum merit, you look at what is the expectation of the doctor? Did he expect to be paid for volunteer services?
Well, and the premise of the question was if he billed the patient. And in that situation, he expects it. And I presume the patient goes in expecting to pay it.
They do expect to be paid. They expect to pay their doctor and not a stranger who shows up and volunteers and provides emergency services. So I think that the plaintiffs would be able to defeat a bill from Dr. McIntyre under these circumstances by saying, I didn't agree to this. I reached no contractual relation or understanding of that. I had no expectation that that you'd be sending me a bill, and so therefore I'm not entitled to pay you. I'm not required to pay you. It's an interesting concept, and it's theoretical in this sense. And again, I don't think that's what the legislature intended. I think that would only be looked at by this court if you agree that the phrase legal entitlement is inserted into a statute in which it doesn't exist.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
Ms. Higginbotham, when would C-1 ever apply to a doctor?
Your Honor, C-1 applies only to hospital emergency room physicians. This case is about Section B-1 and D under Section 74.00.
If B-1, well, this was service that was provided in an emergency room in a hospital. If you say B-1 applies, then when would C-1 ever apply?
Your Honor, C-1 is just an additional exception that an emergency room physician would have to meet.
Because you could never meet that. I could meet the exception. I'm not an emergency room doctor. I'm a pediatrician, and I just take care of well babies, and I just happen to be close by, and they call me in the emergency room. I go in the emergency room, and I provide emergency service, and I walk out. I don't expect to get paid, whatever to pay. And you say, but B-1 applies. And I'd say, well, wait a minute. I don't regularly administer hospital care in an emergency room, and certainly I was there for unrelated to what I usually do, so why am I not entitled to that escape? But you could render this for remuneration. So my question again, how would, if it applies to Dr. McIntyre in this case, providing medical service in the emergency room, when would C-1 ever apply?
Your Honor, C-1 is an additional exception that emergency room physicians would have to meet. It doesn't affect doctors such as Dr. McIntyre who do not regularly practice in the emergency room. Section B-1 applies to everyone inside hospitals and outside hospitals. And the legislative intent of the Good Samaritan Law is to encourage both laypersons as well as physicians to respond to emergencies and help people who might not otherwise receive help.
If we read subsection D as being legal entitlement, as the Court of Appeals did, when would you ever have a situation where a doctor could respond to an emergency and get the protection of the statute?
Your Honor, doctors would ideally respond to emergencies outside of hospitals and be entitled to the Good Samaritan statute under the plain meaning of the statute.
But why wouldn't they be entitled to compensation then?
Your Honor, it would be a fact question based on facts and circumstances whether a doctor could enforce a bill sent at the roadside.
But under your argument and the Court of Appeals analysis, there are many theories under which a doctor can be legally entitled: quantum merit, restitution, implied contract. Those would apply outside the hospital setting as well as on the roadside. So I can't envision a situation where a doctor could ever have the benefit of this affirmative defense.
Your Honor, the doctors would have the benefit of this affirmative defense if they were able to conclusively prove that they did not customarily bill in that situation.
Which is done in this case.
Correct. And that they were not entitled to receive payment.
Well, that begs the question, doesn't it? I mean, tell me a situation where a doctor could render any kind of care where they would not be legally entitled under an implied contract or any other equitable theory.
Your Honor, quantum merit and restitution doctrine, as well as implied contract, looks to the expectation of both parties as well as the facts and circumstances under which the care is rendered.
Well, let's suppose it was a Walmart, and the Walmart person goes on the intercom and says, is there a doctor in the house? And the doctor delivers the baby at the Walmart, and the woman doesn't say, stop, I don't want your help, and their eyes meet, and he delivers the child. Is he entitled to bill under those circumstances?
Your Honor, he might be entitled to bill under those circumstances, but it would be a question for the trial court to determine
there are no disputed facts. Under your theory, would he be entitled to bill or not?
Your Honor, it's not necessary for this court to conclude whether Dr. McIntyre or the doctor in your hypothetical would be entitled to bill.
This is always going to go to the jury. And the Walmart number one in Smithville, the jury will rule one way, and number two in Bastrop, they're going to rule the other way. But there's no way we can or should ever put any legal standard on this.
Not necessarily, Your Honor. And to answer your question, the doctor would not necessarily be able to enforce that bill because the patient would not necessarily have the expectation of paying for those services performed in the floor of Walmart. That's completely different from this case, in which Ms. Ramirez was scheduled to receive her.
So the only difference is that this occurred in the hospital as opposed to the Walmart.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's a major critical
point. But how do we get around the fact that the legislature made specific provisions for Good Samaritan's statute to apply in a hospital? You're saying it can never apply in a hospital, but the legislature specifically said it does.
No, Your Honor, we're not contending that it could never apply in a hospital. For example, if Ms. Ramirez went into labor in the hospital cafeteria in the middle of lunch, Dr. McIntyre might well be a Good Samaritan under those facts.
But what does that have to do with entitlement? You still haven't given me a situation where there would not be entitlement to payment, legal entitlement. I just can't come up with one, can you?
Yes, Your Honor, at the roadside or in the Walmart.
Well, why would they not be entitled under a quantum merit theory? I mean, implied consent, I don't quite understand that really, but under just a pure quantum merit theory, restitution.
Because, Your Honor, the patient in that circumstance, the person receiving the care, would not have the expectation of being billed under those circumstances. Even if they're accepting the gratuitous medical care, a doctor who is treating a patient in Walmart or in a ditch at the roadside doesn't have medical equipment. It's not a sterile, well-lit environment. They don't have sterile medical instruments. They don't have the option of going to surgery.
So the legislature, when they wrote C about treating in a hospital, that's just pure surplusage.
No, Your Honor, that's just an additional hurdle for doctors and hospitals to overcome if they regularly practice in emergency rooms to avail themselves of the Good Samaritan defense.
But that shows that you can get, I mean, your whole notion of if you're in a hospital, you expect to pay, and if you're not, you don't expect to pay, as Judge Owen pointed out, seems undone by the plain language of the statute.
No, Your Honor. The plain language of the statute clearly creates two distinct possibilities for when a person shall be deemed to be acting with the expectation to charge. First, if they would ordinarily receive payment for their services, and second, if they would be entitled to receive payment for their services. This court does not have to decide today whether Dr. McIntyre is a Good Samaritan under the statute or whether any physician would ever be able to prove entitlement.
Well, why not? Because if nobody can ever prove it, then what's the point of the statute?
Your Honor, doctors could prove entitlement by putting on some evidence.
Well, you say we don't have to decide, but we do have to decide.
No, Your Honor, this court need look no further than the fact that Dr. McIntyre presented absolutely no evidence regarding entitlement.
What could he have presented?
Your Honor, first, he could have specifically stated himself that he was not entitled to receive payment, and then he could have brought evidence from other physicians who never billed under those circumstances, who testified that it's hospital policy not to bill under these circumstances. He could have proved that other doctors have not billed in this situation.
You don't think the doctor was trying to say that when he said he thought it would be unethical to bill the client? And secondly, does a doctor have to file a declaratory judgment act to get a determination of entitlement, then come back to the statute to see if he's covered?
To answer the first part of your question, no, Your Honor. The fact that Dr. McIntyre's opinion about whether he would be ethically prohibited from sending a bill is not dispositive and does not prove as a matter of law that he's not entitled to enforce the bill. And to answer the second part of your question, no, a doctor would not have to get a declaratory judgment to show that they're entitled to win on summary judgment. And it's critical that we remember this is summary judgment. They would have to conclusively prove as a matter of law that there is no fact question regarding whether they're entitled to bill.
If ordinarily modifies entitlement, then why doesn't the customary testimony get you there, that ordinarily you're not entitled to? Because his testimony was that it would be unethical, I'd never heard of anyone doing it, it was not customary. If, in fact, ordinarily modifies entitlement, why doesn't his testimony get there? Or does it? Do you think it would?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. Whether ordinarily modifies the first part of the statute or entitlement as well, it doesn't make a difference to this court. Even if the statute were properly read as ordinarily entitled to receive, the legislature must have intended for this court to look beyond Dr. McIntyre's own testimony to answer the question of whether he's a Good Samaritan. First, you look to the custom of Dr. McIntyre. Does he customarily bill under these circumstances? Then you look to whether he's ordinarily entitled to bill under those circumstances. This court has interpreted the term or in other statutory construction cases and concluded that it's disjunctive in nature. For example, if this were a tax law and the law read, you must pay a tax if you're either a doctor or a lawyer and you wish to escape paying taxes, you would have to prove you're neither a doctor nor are you a lawyer.
Let me ask you this. If we were to rule in this case that Dr. McIntyre or any doctor under these circumstances as a matter of law is not legally entitled, what would that do to your case?
Your Honor, if you were to rule, I'm sorry, can you repeat your question?
That Dr. McIntyre is not legally entitled to bill for services, for the services he performed in this case.
If you rule as a matter of law,
if we were to do that,
entitled, then
right,
you would have to reverse the Court of Appeals. However, this court shouldn't reach that conclusion for three reasons. First, because Dr. McIntyre presented no evidence whatsoever regarding whether he was legally entitled and did not meet his summary judgment burden. Second, because the Ramirez family presented controverting evidence through the affidavit of Dr. Edelberg creating the fact question. And third, because the facts and circumstances...
Well, did you bring a point of error here that the trial court erred in excluding that affidavit?
Yes, Your Honor. In the Court of Appeals, we argued that the trial court improperly excluded...
I'm talking about here.
Yes, Your Honor, we did. We did not have to reach that question in the Court of Appeals because the Court of Appeals simply concluded that Dr. McIntyre didn't meet his summary judgment burden and didn't have to address that any further. But we did raise that it was error for the trial court to strike Dr. Edelberg's affidavit on the basis that it did, because it was confident summary judgment evidence. It satisfied all requirements under Texas Rules of Civil Procedure 166A, and it's an abuse of discretion to strike an affidavit that meets those requirements.
Let me ask you, it would help me if you could give me an example of a doctor who provides emergency care in a hospital that would not be covered by B and D.
Certainly, Your Honor, I can give you two examples of
okay.
hospital care. If Dr. McIntyre were in a stuck elevator with Ms. Ramirez and she spontaneously went into labor, he didn't have the benefit of his equipment or assistance, if he was trapped in an elevator with Ms. Ramirez in the hospital, delivered that baby, that would probably fall under the Good Samaritan statute. The example,
why is that?
Because, Your Honor, it is not clear that Ms. Ramirez would expect a bill under those circumstances. Dr. McIntyre would not be having the benefit of the tools of his trade.
But if the purpose is to encourage doctors to respond in an emergency, it's hard for me to grasp the trapped elevator situation. I mean, how would we encourage physician response under your reading?
Your Honor, first I'd like to remind
now,
the court...
I'm sorry. How is that different than what he did?
Your Honor, it's very different than what he did. Dr. McIntyre...
She's having a baby. She's in the hospital, and it's an emergency situation. He races in, and how is that... It's in a stuck elevator. How is that different than she's in the hallway, or she's even in the emergency room on the floor?
Your Honor, it's dramatically different under these circumstances. Ms. Ramirez was artificially induced into labor in a labor and delivery unit. Dr. McIntyre was down the hall practicing obstetrical medicine. He had nurses with him. He was in a sterile labor and delivery unit delivering a baby, which is what he does for a living. He's in the business of delivering babies. And he had access to medical equipment. He had access to drugs. He had a well-lit, clean environment. He had the availability of consult with other physicians.
But entitlement to payment relates to the delivery service itself, doesn't it? I mean, what you're paying for the service and not for... I still don't see how those things connect.
Your Honor, entitlement is not based simply on the fact that services were rendered. It also turns on the expectation of parties and the circumstances under which those services were rendered. The simple fact that a doctor performs medical services alone does not necessarily entitle him to payment. But this court doesn't have to answer that question today to determine that the Court of Appeals was correct. The court need look no further than the fact that Dr. McIntyre failed to meet his summary judgment burden and to require him to not put on any evidence about entitlement would go against the plain reading of the statute and would be changing the statute.
You said there were two examples. One was the elevator. What's the other?
Your Honor, the other example I could offer the court is the hospital cafeteria example. Ms. Ramirez was eating lunch in the cafeteria, visiting a friend, talking at a table, spontaneously goes into labor, and Dr. McIntyre rushes over and delivers the baby. That also could present a situation in the locus of a hospital where he might be a good Samaritan. The distinction here is that Ms. Ramirez was scheduled for professional obstetrical services, and Dr. McIntyre was on the job treating another obstetrical patient right down the hall, and he testified that he would have charged that patient for the same...
I'm sorry, but C doesn't talk about elevators. C is specifically absolving doctors who provide this type of medical service from liability for negligence if the very type of medical service they usually provide was in an emergency circumstance, so long as they're not the emergency room physician, and it is... Well, the reason they're in that emergency room is unrelated to the health care that they're providing. And so, isn't this designed specifically for the doctor that's down the hallway who gets the code blue and comes racing because any doctor is required to respond, and they show up and they provide medical service, but this is not where they're ordinarily stationed. They're not ordinarily the emergency room doctor. This is not ordinarily their responsibility. Isn't that what that was designed for?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. C1 is limited to emergency room physicians performing care in the emergency room and does not apply to...
But it doesn't apply to emergency room physicians. That's what I'm saying.
Right. It does.
It says
apply.
If you're an emergency room physician, then this exception wouldn't apply to you. You don't get the Good Samaritan if you're an emergency room physician.
Correct. And you also don't get it, according to the legislature, if you ordinarily receive or you're entitled to receive payment for your services, regardless of where they take place.
But under that provision, you don't reach D until you satisfy C, that you're an emergency room physician.
No, Your Honor. Subsection D specifically states, for purposes of Section B1 and C1, you will be deemed to have the expectation of charging if you ordinarily receive or would be entitled to receive payment. Sections A, B, all apply to everyone, inside or outside a hospital. Subsection C is just an additional hurdle for doctors and hospitals to overcome if they happen to be emergency room physicians. That doesn't apply to this case. This case is focused on subsection B1 and D, and no Texas court has ever interpreted section D to read that an obstetrician delivering a baby in a hospital labor and delivery unit is not entitled to receive payment for those services.
If we agree with your interpretation of D, that it should be read disjunctively because of the word or there, which is the plain language, and we disagree with your argument that a person could always, and we believe that a person could always argue that they're entitled, or a doctor could always argue that they're entitled, perhaps win on that argument, that they're entitled to remuneration, then wouldn't it be the case that doctors could never be Good Samaritans in a hospital?
Your Honor, if the court concluded that doctors are universally entitled to send a bill, regardless of where the care is rendered, then yes, they would always be in a situation where they're not Good Samaritans. But this court should not reach that conclusion. No Texas court has ever held that a doctor is entitled to bill under extenuating circumstances, such as at the roadside or delivering a baby in a Walmart, for example.
Well, I understand, and you've said several times, that this court does not have to or should not reach the contention about entitlement. Let's assume we believe we have to. Then isn't my conclusion correct that a doctor in a hospital could never be a Good Samaritan?
No, Your Honor, because a doctor in a hospital treating a patient who is not admitted as a patient or who is not already under that patient's care, that would be a question for the court. The doctor would have to determine that the patient consented to those services, that the patient was expecting to receive professional services, that it's the custom to enforce that type of bill, that other physicians bill under those circumstances. It's a question that this court would have to leave open to the trial courts, because we want the statute to be flexible enough to include situations where doctors are acting out of their element, where they don't have the availability of the tools of their trade, where they're not already engaged in their profession. We want those doctors to be Good Samaritans, but not in this case where Dr. McIntyre was delivering a baby in the labor and delivery room where he regularly practices. the legislature never intended to create a rule that says obstetricians delivering babies and their labor and delivery.
Well, they did intend to create a rule that would encourage physician response. And to read it your way, there'd be no incentive for the doctor to respond if that's the way we read the statute.
First, Your Honor, there's no need to create a special incentive for doctors to respond to emergency patients in hospitals because federal laws already require hospital patients to be treated under laws such as COBRA. Additionally, hospitals can contractually require physicians to respond to emergency pages, so we don't need a special added incentive for doctors to answer those pages. And Dr. McIntyre told this court today that when he responded to that page, he wasn't thinking about the Good Samaritan statute. He wasn't thinking about whether he was going to be sued as a Good Samaritan. He wasn't thinking about the statute because it doesn't provide any incentive for doctors to respond in hospitals.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
I'd like to respond to three points that were made during the question.
Before you do that,
yes,
sir. I believe you tangentially addressed this earlier, but would this court have to disregard the plain language of subsection B, the disjunctive language, in order to agree with your interpretation?
No, I do not believe so, Your Honor. The reason why is that I do believe that the adverb ordinarily modifies receive and or is entitled to receive. And so then if that's true, and I think that is a logical interpretation of statutory construction, we look at the summary judgment proof and whether Dr. McIntyre negated the ordinarily received, which everybody, including the Court of Appeals, agrees he did, and whether he negated ordinarily entitled to receive, which the summary judgment proof also negates. So the disjunctive part of it is handled by the summary judgment proof. On the point that Judge Wainwright and Judge O'Neill and Judge Phelps made about the exception which swallowed the rule is really true here. If you believe the approach that the respondents are taking in this case, then never at any time can a specialist who responds to an emergency in his specialty, in the hospital setting or otherwise, would be entitled to a summary judgment if you simply have an affidavit from someone that reaches a legal conclusion that he would be entitled to receive, they would be entitled to receive or send a bill. That simply is not true and should not be encouraged by this court. The legislature certainly doesn't intend for that result to be. When we look at what I think is at the heart of the respondent's argument, they want this court to overrule the legislature on two points. First, that they want to have the protection of the Good Samaritan statute abolished in the hospital setting. The legislature has spoken very clearly in subsection C. It doesn't say that you are entitled to Good Samaritan protection in the hospital elevator or cafeteria. It says in the hospital. Understanding that the legislature certainly knows that doctors practice in the hospital and understand that they have all kinds of supplies and equipment available to them, and they want doctors like McIntyre to simply go to the scene of emergency in the hospital no matter where it is, be it down the hall or in the elevator or in the cafeteria or in the emergency room unless they are an emergency room doctor. And I think the Hernandez case speaks to that point as well. That was a pediatrician who was at a hospital seeing another pediatric patient. There was an overhead page similar to this. Dr. Lufar, in that case, responded to the emergency room in that hospital. And the court held he was entitled to protection of the Good Samaritan statute. The issue of protection in the hospital generally has been resolved by the legislature and by the Hernandez case. The other point that I think they're trying to establish is they want to lower the burden of proof on standard of care if a doctor responds in his specialty. And I refer you to pages 17 and 18 of their brief, of their response. That's almost exactly what they say. Again, the legislature has spoken to this, and I'm asking this court not to overrule that legislative intent. If the Good Samaritan statute is intended to encourage doctors and others to respond, certainly we want the doctors responding who have the most specialized knowledge to handle the care. I give you an example. In a rural hospital, which may not be equipped like it is at St. David's here, you have two doctors in the hospital seeing patients. You have a pediatrician and you have an orthopedic. A child has an allergic reaction and his throat begins to close. There's a page for someone to respond to that emergency. The orthopedic has no idea what to do, but he's not legally entitled to send a bill because it's not in his specialty. The pediatrician knows exactly what to do, but he becomes paralyzed by the fear that he may be entitled to send a bill under some legal theory he's never thought about. And so he hesitates. And that, I believe, is not what this court can do.
Any other questions?
Final question. Whose expectation in subsection B, in your opinion, that the legislature can be talking about?
The doctor.
And in subsection B, whose expectation there?
The second part of it, which is the ordinarily entitled to receive or being ordinarily receive or being entitled to receive, I think it's a different phrase than subsection B.
It says shall be deemed to be acting for or in expectation of remuneration.
Yes, the
expectation
doctor.
There, the doctors, not the patients.
Right, because they're not going to receive payment. The patient is not going to receive payment. The doctor would.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the first cause. The court will take a brief recess.
All right.